Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kim, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day. A pair of home runs for D.D. Gregorius as only John Sterling of the Yankees Radio Network can call.
Pitch. Breaking ball is hit to deep right center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Yes, indeedy. This is the dawning of the age of Gregorius. Didi homers to right center, and the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
As only he can call it, John Sterling on the Yankees Radio Network. InviteManager.com, huh? Tony Knopp, our old friend, one of the more popular segments we have on this show. As always, Tony, it's great to hear you again, my friend.
Things are great. Great to talk to you guys again.
Great to talk with you. Let's start with World Cup 2026. Is there a different attitude about World Cup 2026 as opposed to Summer Olympics 2028?
Somewhat. The reality, people are pretty optimistic about the Olympics in 2028 just because, you know, Los Angeles has a good history of hosting events that don't break the bank. You know, 1984, when they hosted the Olympics, they were the first ones to turn a profit on it in decades. You know, the World Cup, I think, companies are optimistic about it. I'll be really curious to see how infrastructure works between the three different countries and who gets to play where, because, you know, obviously travel is a big aspect of, you know, where a World Cup is hosted. But we all knew it was a matter of time before FIFA had to come back somewhere where they were going to make some money, right? Qatar, nobody's going to Qatar in 2022. Russia is claiming that they've sold out their tickets, but it's not looking like it's the most robust World Cup we've ever seen. So, look, this is the world stage coming back to a country where all of the infrastructure exists already, and we'll be getting built upon anyways for the Olympics coming in 2028. So I'm not surprised by it even a little bit. I'm just surprised it took this long.
Exactly. One thing with the World Cup, though, except for some venues, and it's not many, where you have to then put trays of grass on top of field turf, mm-hmm. The facilities are already in place as opposed to having to build facilities. So you have to feel more comfortable about a bid like that. And also, let's face it, you got 45 other countries bringing fans with them into North America. Are these the selling points on it?
I think so. And, you know, look, this is obviously becoming more of a commercial enterprise as every one of them goes by. Not that it hasn't been a commercial enterprise, but they're expanding the field. They awarded the World Cup to three countries, two of which are not qualifiers regularly. I'd like to say the U.S. is a regular qualifier, but they're not playing next month or this month and next. So for them to say, yeah, we're going to award this to the North American contingent and we're going to let all three of them in, it's just starting to show that this is becoming more of a maybe they're a little less worried about the honor and exclusivity of the World Cup, and they're a little more worried about the commercial success of it.
Okay, so what? Give me the initial read from your, because the corporate partners buy months and years out.
Yeah.
So how enthusiastic were they about 2028 Los Angeles, and have you had at least an initial read on 2026 World Cup?
2026 World Cup will be very strong, but what's really important here is it's going to absolutely destroy Qatar in 2022. My belief is, and this is conspiracy theory only, they did this for two reasons. One, they need to get back to North America to make some money. Two, Qatar might not be ready, and we might not be playing the World Cup there in 2022. And it's very easy at that point to push the World Cup from Qatar back to North America, which they did with the Women's World Cup in the past already anyways. So I think there's a little bit of hedging a bet right now, because everything we're hearing out of Qatar is bad. And now you're going to go to world sponsors and say, you should sponsor the World Cup in Qatar 2022. bring everybody out, bring all your corporate partners. But, oh, by the way, the North American World Cup's the next one. I mean, almost any corporate sponsor is going to look at that and say, unless we're really trying to drive business in the Middle East, which some businesses are, we don't have any interest in this. We're gonna wait and save our powder for World Cup 2026.
It sounds like it's the same theory we heard about Tokyo 2020 with the Olympics. They'd rather say, hey, let's send it there in terms of saving their money and moving it to that. Is that a fair analogy?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, Pyeongchang was a cool Olympics that didn't do so well commercially. Tokyo is going to be a sensation as a winter or as the Summer Olympic Games. Same thing with Paris, I assume, even though I think they're already a bajillion dollars over their budget. So that's going to be a good joke for us for the next 6 years. But, you know, they're starting to realize that. And, you know, there was a referendum that passed that Switzerland and there's another country that escapes me now that would not approve a bid on the Winter Olympic Games. So I think we're seeing what you and I have been talking about for the last 2 years. You know, local governments are no longer interested in hosting these events if they're not going to be profitable. And so these events, which were kind of, you know, sticking their nose up to North America and the North American money saying, hey, we can grow the game elsewhere, are starting to realize, well, maybe we can't. Maybe our bread gets buttered here.
My understanding is that the United States will get 60 of the 80 matches. 10 will be in Canada, 10 will be in Mexico. What's it going to take for a city to end up hosting some World Cup events, and how important is it to certain corporate partners as to which cities get it?
So when these guys look at what they're sponsoring, so I remember the World Cup, it was here last time, and what it does to the local economy. It's a massive boon to the local economy, especially with tourism. And we were lucky enough where I was that we had Brazil in our section in Northern California. So we got to go see them at Stanford Stadium, and it really, you know, it was the inception of the MLS, which has since grown. It all started with that World Cup game, or with those World Cup games. You know, when you're a corporate sponsor, it's really interesting. They don't look at it the way we generally would as, you know, fantasy football owners. You know, they don't look at it and say, hey, this is the best one, we need to invest here. And they do that sometimes, but really what they're looking at is, okay, I am a major credit card company, or I'm a major consumer packaged goods brand, and I'm trying to expand my business into the Northeast. I don't really care who's playing there. I hope we get good teams, but I'm trying to get expansion into the Northeast. And that's generally how they approach this stuff. They say, look, I've got a sponsorship budget. I need to use it in these different regions or in these different countries, and that's where I'm going to apply my powder because that's going to help us grow and get people to sign up for more credit cards, buy more toilet paper, you know, pick up more cereal, that sort of thing. It's a lot more scientific than people think and a lot less reliant on who the team is as much as it's as reliant on where it is. That's the sponsor side. Now, the hospitality side, the people who are taking customers to the games, they want to go where Brazil's playing. They want to go where Italy's playing. They want to go where France is playing, right? That's totally different.
And yet there are certain hotbeds in this country. You know, Kansas City is one. Obviously, there, you know, Dallas is another. But the Pacific Northwest between Vancouver, Canadian side of the bid, and Seattle. Now, Portland doesn't have a facility to host this.
No,
but that area is hot when it comes to the sport of soccer. I would assume from a Pacific Northwest, and also from an investment point of view, a lot of people love the Pacific Northwest.
You know, they love the Pacific Northwest from the investment point of view. They love it because there's been a boon there as far as Fortune 500 scale. You know, when people look at consolidation of Fortune 500 businesses, they generally think, you know, New York, and there's got to be some oil money in Texas, and we know all the tech companies in California, but they always overlook the Washington area, the Pacific Northwest, where you have, you know, Nike and Starbucks and Microsoft and Amazon, and as you start to rattle that list off, you know, the Boeings, Raytheons, all of those, people start to realize, wow, that's a lot more influence than I anticipated, on top of the fact that their soccer culture up there is second to maybe nobody in North America. You know, you have some people in Kansas City and otherwise who will argue with that, but they sell everything out up there. Whenever the national team plays, it's sold out. They sell out all their MLS games. They've got a wonderful rivalry going. They've got the giant CenturyLink Field there that they play at. It'll be interesting. Who gets it, Vancouver or Seattle or both? I honestly could see it being both.
I think it's both. I think in Canada it's going to be Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe Calgary, but I don't know. It's not the easiest to get to.
Not the easiest to get to, and the stadium is, I don't think, is big enough.
No, yeah, where the Stampeders play.
Yeah. Yeah, McMahon Stadium, I want to say it's called.
I know the Saddle Dome is where the hockey team plays. I don't remember what they call the Stampeders.
Yeah, I think McMahon Stadium is what it's called. I'm not sure if it's big enough. BC Place is. Toronto obviously has Rogers Centre. Montreal mm-hmm. still has the Big O. Might as well use it for something.
what a great stadium that was. You and I remember that. I'm sure a lot of listeners don't remember watching games there anymore. It's been such so long.
Hey, you know, we also remember Yuppie, the mascot.
Yeah. Oh man. That team. The saddest part of that whole thing was that team in 1994 had Pedro Martinez and basically everybody else on it, and I think was in first place by 10 or 12 games.
And they had the best record in baseball.
And then there was a lockout, and it decimated the franchise completely. They were on their way to a World Series, and just now they don't even have a team. They got decimated by that.
And if baseball ever expands, they'll seriously be considered for it because baseball feels guilt.
They tried to make it work, but then Loria wanted him out of there, and then the Nats showed up, and then Miami, which is a whole different story, fleeced the local government there and took a bunch of money. I mean, if anybody wants to read about how to take advantage of public servants, read about what they did down in Miami. They basically paid for that stadium, and then nobody showed up, and they flipped it, and man, they really took Miami for a ride.
Okay, what does the decision of one player mean for corporate money as to where it's distributed, and that one player is LeBron James?
Yeah, so in football, it means a lot more than most other sports. People like to think that LeBron's the first time this has ever happened, but not so true. I mean, Wayne Gretzky did that when he moved from Edmonton down to Los Angeles, and it was a tectonic shift. So, wherever LeBron ends up, it is a tectonic shift to that business. You can make every argument under the sun that, he's the reason there shouldn't be a salary tax or, a salary cap or a luxury tax. But as far as the sponsors go, they're going to follow. They're going to follow if it's in a situation where it helps them grow globally. Because the difference between LeBron James and, say, me being a sponsor and wanting to sponsor the World Cup in the Northeast, LeBron James has international appeal now. So if I'm trying to grow internationally, I link my name to him. Kobe Bryant, the vast majority of Kobe's sponsorship dollars over the last few years of his career came out of China, where he sells three times as many jerseys than anybody else. And that's what they're really looking at with LeBron James. It's, where's his market going to be? How is that market going to affect sponsorship? As far as hospitality goes, it's going to, just absolutely blow it out for a team. So any team that's going to land him is going to see such a significant lift in ticket sales through, secondary means, right? People think that it's just going to be, oh, well, the tickets are sold out. Teams aren't that foolish anymore. If I'm the Lakers and I sign LeBron, or if I'm the Sixers and I sign LeBron, now all of a sudden I can get you some tickets, but you've got to sign up as a sponsor, or you've got to buy some of the other events that we have that come through the building that maybe don't do so well. So that's the kind of impact he has. People think just because LeBron shows up at the 76ers, now the 76ers are sold out and killing it. Well, it goes beyond that. The 76ers are sold out and killing it, and all of their other properties are getting to leverage his drawing power as well.
Right. On expansion, if the NFL goes into London, or let's take the NBA, and the NBA goes into London, Madrid, Paris, Berlin, mm-hmm. as examples.
It will. Yeah.
What corporately would that mean? How interested would corporations be in investing in now a league that is now invested itself in Europe?
It depends on what sponsors we're talking about. A lot of the traditional sponsors that people would think would follow them over there, the big names that you guys would recognize, they're generally not that focused in Europe anymore. A lot of the sponsorship dollars we see are going into growing economies, whether that's in South America, China, the Asia-Pacific region.
Asia.
And that's why you see MasterCard doing a big deal with, the Rugby World Cup. That's why you see, CDW getting involved internationally. It's why you see these companies doing that. It's all really just about their markets. So the traditional sponsors for the NBA here, outside of like the apparel guys who want to sell anywhere they can, probably wouldn't be as interested in Europe as many would think. But then there's a number of European sponsors and European banks, Santander, people like that, who would clamor for the rights to get there. I mean, it's I'm very long basketball as a sport right now. The fact is, they just everything is falling. Everything's going their way. They got international participation. They really nailed it before everybody else. You know, the expansion to Toronto was a hit. It opened up Canada. You know, Vancouver didn't go so well. They probably should have planted somebody there like they did Carter in Toronto. But they're in a situation now where they've got this international league. There's no concerns about head injuries. There's no concerns about, you know, it being dominated by a specific, you know, country like the Dominican, the baseball. They're going to go to Europe. It's a very short period of time they're going to be over there. The only problem you have in Europe is they have very different laws in Europe. So with basketball games in Turkey, for example, there's no drinking. And then when they do have drinking, they actually have giant bulletproof glass in between the fans and the court. So they'll have to work that out.
Terrific. But they also the NBA also got fortunate. Dirk Nowitzki came over from Germany, ended up being a big-time player. Manu Ginobili comes in from Argentina, he's a big-time player. Mm-hmm. Yao Ming comes over from China and ends up being a big-time player. I mean, personnel helped open up avenues for them.
Yao Ming made more money for Kobe Bryant than he did for himself by coming over here. And, you know, that's really where they have to be careful about how they expand. Because if you look at where they've had success with expansion franchises and where they've struggled, they need to try to find a way to model what the Golden Knights did and make sure that an expansion franchise gets a name that people will pay attention to, either the team's winning or not. Because if you look at the market demographics of Toronto versus Vancouver, when they opened both of those teams, people forget about the Vancouver Grizzlies. It really wasn't that much different. The problem was the Grizzlies whiffed on their first four draft picks. You know, the Raptors got Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady, and we're a 50-win team by season three. I think the,
you weren't big on Big Country.
I wasn't big on Big Country. I remember Big Country. Oh, man.
Brian
Reeves. He was with the team to Memphis.
Well, the guy that was the coach of the Vancouver Grizzlies, a good friend, was an old friend of mine, Brian Hill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They had, who was the other kid? They got a kid out of Cal that was supposed to be a scorer and never turned into anything.
Yeah.
He was in the league for about 20 years, but he just never got anything done. Sharif Abdur-Rahim or something. I forget what his name was.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yes, that is.
Yeah, yep. Sharif Abdur-Rahim. But that's the point. So what's totally changed the market, and fans don't realize this yet, is what the Vegas Golden Knights did this year and how successful that was, not just for them, but for everybody else who got to share in the fees in the expansion pool. Now Seattle's trying to do the same thing with the NHL and say, look, we want the same draft rules. Obviously, other teams are saying this is a problem. You know, you put somebody in the Stanley Cup Finals year one. But that's the new model for expansion. You know, what we know in our generation is put a team there, everybody's excited for 3 to 5 years, the team sucks for a while, right? Unless they land Shaq. But now they're going to start saying, hey, look, we, you know, as this expands the pool for the league, we need to start putting people in places that, you know, drive more interest. And the NBA really does have to get more international because the rumor right now is the Denver Broncos going on sale would make the Carolina Panthers sale look like chump change. Like there are people throwing around $3.5-4 billion for the Denver Broncos right now.
Yeah, because the Bolin family does have to sell it. What Carolina got now, David Tepper wasn't even the highest bidder.
No.
I mean, that's and he also, to his credit, Tony paid cash.
Yeah. Hey, cash up front when you're one of the leagues. To the listeners who haven't heard about what happened with the Islanders. It's a good story to go look up online when they accepted a bidder who literally had no money at all and ran the New York Islanders for 2 years. So I think we're going to see continued awarding of franchises to people like that. There's a lot of rumors out there now that private equity is going to get involved in buying teams because they're good investments. I don't ever see that happening again because of how bad an experience it was with Fox and the Dodgers. Right, there's just too much turnover. It's not within a family. I think they look at the ownership groups in, you know, the Allen family up in Seattle. They like the ownership group in Boston where you have Grousbeck running it with a bunch of rich guys.
Yep.
You know, Golden State's run by one rich guy, but it's really 20 guys that are rich that are invested in it. I think that's the future for this.
Yeah, I think guys like John Henry, David Tepper, Jerry Jones, leagues love those guys. Mark Cuban,
Jim Pilata,
that's the owner.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, final question as we always get to. So, next 18 months, you're talking with people, what is hot, what is not?
You know, it's really interesting right now. This market is out of control as far as what the spending that we're seeing. Consumer confidence is pretty high, and that translates into our market pretty rapidly. So people are opening up their checkbooks and really getting after it these days. The U.S. Open this weekend will be a big win for the PGA. And people don't realize that the U.S. Open is not a PGA Tour event. It's a PGA. There is a USGA event.
So the USGA really event, and they're in the right spot, in the right moment, right golf course, everything.
Everything. And if Tiger can get in contention, that's going to be an absolute monster. Football, obviously, is what everybody's focused on right now. And what people are really interested in is, you know, just like we were talking at the beginning of the segment about how FIFA has kind of realized and the IOC is starting to realize, I got to go to where my bread's buttered. The NFL has realized that too. And so people are getting more excited about the Super Bowl because the next five Super Bowls are not in cold weather cities.
That's right.
They're in traditional, these are cities people travel to. They have the infrastructure to host them. You know, we're going back to New Orleans and Florida and Los Angeles. And so that's what people are talking about a lot.
See, and that's the key right there. The key is it's okay to experiment with a Las Vegas as a franchise. But it's now 2018, Tony, and my thought is we now have the sample size of a lifetime to know what actually works and what doesn't work.
We do.
That's how I look at it. I mean, I look at it as it's okay once in a while to see if something else works, but we now know what works and what doesn't work for the consumer, correct?
Exactly. And what's fascinating, so I spent some time with the Warriors a couple weeks ago. I was at the Golden Knights. I was at the Raiders site and center last week. Also saw the UFC.
And by the way, those are two franchises that are going to new places. People don't realize the Warriors are going back to San Francisco next year.
Back to San Francisco. The Warriors sold it out twice as fast as they thought they were going to. Now they just got to figure out how to transition themselves into being a service business because they sold out the Chase Center faster than they thought. And the Raiders had 94 suites, and I think the goal was to have like 30 of them sold by now and then start to focus nationally. And I don't remember exactly, but I think they told me something like 60 or 70 of them were sold. And Steve, they're sold on 15-year deals, which is absurd. In Los Angeles, they're getting 20-year deals right now, which is absurd. I mean, hockey teams and basketball teams right now are still getting 1-, 3-, and 5-year deals. So it's, you know, there are some hot markets. And what these teams have to figure out is, do we have everybody expire at the same time? Because that's what some of the teams are doing. Is it's all right, everybody's signing a 15-year deal. Well, in 15 years, you're going to be sweating because all of your luxury suites are up for renewal in the same year. And you need to start extending people in advance. Or you better start winning.
Start winning. Hey,
start winning.
You're a winner
win,
with
baby.
Us always. Love having you on the show. I hope everything is going well for you business-wise. I hope your family's doing great, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
All right, absolutely. We'll talk very soon. Enjoy the late spring here.
Yeah, very nice. Thanks, Tony.
All right, bye, guys.
Tony Knopp joining us from California. How about that? Because a lot of people realize the Warriors are moving back to San Francisco. I mean, the Chase Center, they had a big event back in September with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant. I think it was in September. One of those, hey, why don't you see what the place looks like? Everybody was pretty much blown away. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. One more half hour to go. And this has been a busy, busy news day. Couple of things that will affect, in fact, three of things that will affect college football today. World Cup today. Suit driving back from Guadalajara today. We think that's where he's vacationing, right?
Something
most
like
people
that.
Most people go to Rehoboth.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you on the show today. It has been a busy, busy day. Yes, the World Cup is coming to North America. At least initially 2026, but if Qatar falls through, maybe 2022, we'll see. And go from there. But 2026, think about this. if you are a 12-year-old right now, you're really, really good. When the World Cup's here, you'll be 20. You might be playing. Just a thought.
It's the right move by FIFA, clearly.
Oh, they had to bring it back here. It's not like it's here every other year. It turns out it is here for the first time since 1994.
Right.
I mean, 1994.
And that's what really got soccer going in this country, because then the MLS started after that, and then everything just kind of went from there.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be cool to have all the three countries involved in this part of the world. So I think this is going to be a good move on the world stage and from an actual, put it for a schematic standpoint, too.
Oh, no question. No question. I think that it's going to be big for this country. And I just think that it's going to be big for the world. I mean, getting them in here, it's big for the fans. So there's a lot of items in here that are all pluses. And again, Tony and I talked about it, and he says, hey, look, Los Angeles is pretty well organized. So, okay, I got that part. I've got that part. But at the same time, you don't have to put as much into facilities. Now, you may, look, we were mentioning the Pacific Northwest. Seattle and Vancouver each would have to have, and you can do this with trays. You just lay the trays over the field turf. But they'll have to put grass in. Same thing with the Meadowlands. Other places you don't have to do that. There just is not as much of an expense of building facilities. The facilities already exist. Now let's get to the college football part. The college football part is really intriguing. The red shirt rule is extremely intriguing. And the reason that the red shirt rule is the flexibility of it. You have the ability, all right, let's do it in a normal way. I have some freshmen. Okay. And I decide to play them in the first three games, non-conference games in the season. And then after that, I make the decision, hey, look, let's survive the next 9, or maybe it's 10, including a championship game. Hold them out. Then I get to a bowl game, and I can play them again in the bowl game because now this rule is flexible. So if I want to go out and play a freshman in games 2, 3, don't need them again until 7, and play them in a bowl game, I can do that. Okay? Now, in all likelihood, you're going to do it in such a way where they can show probably in the non-conference. And then work on them in practice and so forth, and then the door opens later on. So I really like what they did with that rule. Now the transfer rule. Remember the transfer. Now the transfer rule starting. Then this will start October 15th. Anytime after October 15th, anybody can go into any coach in football. This is in football now. And they can say, look, I'm transferring. Now, obviously, a coach is going to sit there and say, okay, now wait a second. Let's talk this out for a little bit. In all fairness, yeah. But once the student-athlete makes it known that that's it, I want to transfer, coach, athletic department can't stop them. Can't put restrictions on them or anything like that. Within 48 hours, they have to put the player's name into the transfer database. And from there, then other schools can talk to said player. This doesn't happen as often as football. It seems more magnified when a Shea Patterson, for example, transfers to Michigan, or a Jake Rudock transfers to Michigan. But look at Ohio State. Who has transferred in to Ohio State? One of the wideouts, Dixon, did. And nobody on defense. Michigan State does not. They've had like a wideout transfer in, but that's about it. Wisconsin, same thing. Because I keep track of these on my chart as to a transfer, where they're from. The transfers usually happen at schools that are struggling, or at FCS schools, or at the Mid-American Conference schools. That's where the transfers happen. A lot of times you have people transferring down. You know, it's more magnified in college football with a transfer because it is not as commonplace as college basketball. College basketball, I hit April 1st, and the first comment I'll make to somebody is, well, let's check the waiver wire today and see how it's going. Because there are usually between 700 and 800 players transferring in men's college basketball per year. 700 to 800 per year. Hey, that's an average of 2 to almost 3 per school. There are 351 Division I schools. Okay, so 702 is 2 per school. You know, you have changes in coaches. Illinois just lost another player the other day. So Illinois, I think, has lost 4 players to transfer this year. But again, Brad Underwood's going into his second year. But in college basketball, it is so much more prevalent to have transfers as opposed to football. Football does not have, by percentage, a large number of transfers. By percentage. Remember, you're talking about not just 85 scholarships, but walk-ons and so forth. I mean, you have 120 players on a team. 85 of them are scholarship players. You don't see movement usually all over the place. I mean, Iowa last year got the Butler kid from Nevada who came in and backed up Akram Wadley at running back. Butler's a good running back. But that was their transfer. And you don't have as many JC transfers, for example, as opposed to college basketball, which has more. I mean, it's a little different between the two. But they want to open up the door that if you want to transfer, you can just walk in and say, I want to transfer. I'd like to talk to you about it. No, I don't want to talk about it. And then you leave, and 48 hours, you're in the transfer database. Right? But what they did not change was that you still have to sit out the year when you transfer, unless you're a grad transfer, of course. Or it's a special circumstance like Shea Patterson. So they kept that part in because many thought they were going to allow transfer. Oh, and by the way, you can go wherever next week and play without sitting out. Remember, that was the thought that in August that might happen. That's not what happened. You can transfer beginning October 15th. The rule in college football goes in that you can transfer within 48 hours after explaining your intent to a transfer. You don't have to do anything else. Your name is in the transfer database, and that's it. And they can't put restrictions on you or anything like that. The redshirt rule, where you get to play up to 4 games but still maintain eligibility, I think there's a lot to that. Valuable game experience. And if it's managed properly, you might see some of these younger players playing in bowl games. For example, you could have seen K.J. Hamler last year, for example, maybe returning punts in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, there's several guys that are among the youngsters on this football team that, instead of sitting out, may have had an opportunity to play in the Fiesta Bowl. Now, James Franklin usually goes with the more experienced players anyway, but the door would be open to do that. And you don't lose your eligibility. You'd still be a redshirt freshman this year. So, Now, the next part's the bowl game part. I know you're enamored with this. In 2020, they're going to expand three bowl games. Now, one is going to, it looks like one's going to replace one. It looks like the Wrigley Field Bowl in Chicago is going to replace the Foster Farms San Francisco Bowl.
At least there's that.
Right? Myrtle Beach will be playing. Now, Myrtle Beach wants to play their games where Coastal Carolina plays. The 20,000-seat stadium. Now, who's in the running for the other ones? Well, believe it or not, Tempe, Arizona wants one to put at Arizona State. So they've stuck their name in there. I know Little Rock, Arkansas, has always wanted a bowl, but I'm not sure that that's going to happen or not. But the other one they didn't say, you know, they've only mentioned who might be in the running. But Brooks Stadium in Myrtle Beach looks like it's going to get one of the games. And, of course, they have a great Chamber of Commerce there. I mean, they're selling Myrtle Beach. Like, how hard can that job be? And Chicago, of course, Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field really wanted it. And it looks like a Big Ten ACC matchup when it's all said and done. And it would probably, and the Big Ten would pull out of the San Francisco Bowl after 2019 so they could have a team go into Wrigley Field. That's where they would change their affiliation, because the Big Ten will be allowed to have a maximum of 8 teams, I guess, in these bowls under these rules, something like that. And part of it, too, is Myrtle Beach has a basketball tournament, too. They're trying to incorporate the two and kind of roll them over and whatever. Well, come on. I could see you. The Myrtle Beach Bowl's being played. You're having a little party.
Yeah.
So as they're, you know, they're playing the game. It's chip and dip day. A few beverages. Suit running around with a lampshade on his head in the third quarter. I mean, all the fun stuff you expect at games like that.
That'd be more entertaining than the bowl game itself.
By the way, who else is interested? Arizona State would like to put a bowl game in Tempe, as I mentioned. Charleston, South Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina have shown interest, as has Little Rock, Arkansas. I can just hear it now. We're going to Little Rock. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment. Wrap it up on News Radio 1070 WK. You should have seen the suit doing the moonwalk to this at Matt's party last year.
I can actually see him pulling that off. You should do that at the Myrtle Beach Bowl.
I'm not going to a Myrtle Beach Bowl. Nah, you were at the golf course. You showed up. You showed up at the 17th hole, as a matter of fact. I think I hit a lob wedge into the green, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Yeah. We did the suit moonwalk then?
No, we did not. He was not doing much moonwalking that day, especially towards the end.
Oh, my. I mean, we were at the fourth hole. He was sore. You're like, what are you doing? Oh, my goodness. And Sean, and for those who don't know, that Sean is out all week. He is not on vacation. Sean's mother passed away early Monday morning. So our deepest condolences to him. He's a terrific guy, terrific son. And he'll be back on Monday, but he's been in contact with both Matt and me, and I think he's hanging in there pretty well.
Definitely. Looking forward to having him back on Monday.
Absolutely. As usual, the suit has not been in any contact. It's just, I don't know. Kind of an enigma, isn't he? Phillies and Rockies tonight. 7:05, 6:30 the airtime. And then tomorrow, no show tomorrow. Oh, don't applaud. Come on. My intent of making that statement was not to promote joy, but just as an announcement, we'll be back on Friday.